I'm Dylan Carty. We're here doing the Real Growth Podcast. I'm here with a good friend of mine, Zach. Who are you, Zach?
Hey, Dylan. I am Zach Alms. I'm with 507 Capital, managing partner, founder of 507 Capital. It is a commercial real estate private equity company focused on buying multi-tenant strip centers, so basically strip malls across the Midwest.
What the heck is a private equity firm?
Yeah, good question. So a private equity company is basically we can, what we do is we can take money from investors that want to invest in real estate, specifically retail strip centers, and deploy their capital into properties. They get an equity share, they get a return, and ideally a great return when we decide to sell it in a 3 to 5 year timeline.
How did you, like, where does that even come? Like, how does Zach get started in something like that? You always been into real estate?
Yeah, so good question. I have been in real estate basically all my life. My parents, my mother was a realtor when I was young and started buying some apartments when I was, you know, in my early teens.
Was she residential focused?
She was residential focused, yep. And but she started, you know, buying apartments, and so I was starting to manage apartments for her or do the maintenance for her when I was still a teenager. Coming out of high school, I bought my first house investment at 20 years old, and I've been investing in real estate for over about 15 years.
Wait a minute, you said you were doing maintenance in there? What happened there? You don't do any more maintenance? We can use some of that around here.
I don't do maintenance on my own. Yeah, so I owned and managed and was the maintenance man for multiple apartments, about 50 up to 50 units at one point.
Okay.
And I just, at one point, I got so burned out on doing all the maintenance, the, you know, fixing the toilets, fixing the sinks, just the most random things all the time, getting those calls. And so eventually I got smart and I started hiring property management companies to handle everything for me.
Yeah.
And then I was still sick and tired of apartments, and I transitioned from apartments to triple net leased retail strip centers.
Okay. So you had owned these apartments for a while, got sick of it, did some research. Did you meet somebody? What made you just flip to triple net or commercial real estate?
Yeah. So, books, lots of books. Okay. I did a lot of reading. And everything I kept coming back. Everything I read, it just kept saying, you know, everything with commercial real estate is the way to go. Triple net leases are the way to go. And so towards the end of 2019, I made the decision to start transitioning to triple net leased properties, and bought my first one just in March of 2020, just about a week before everything shut down from COVID.
Right. The worst time.
Literally a week before everything shut down.
And you're like, yeah, crap, where's my apartments now?
My tenants called me in the first month of ownership or sent me emails or letters and said that we're going to stop paying you rent. And I was like, shit, this is the first month of rent I'm supposed to get. It was not ideal, but made it work.
And how much of a gap between when that happened to when you were like collecting rent from apartments? Like, did you have a gap in there where you sold some stuff and didn't do anything, or how reliant were you on that like income?
So I still had some apartments. That was when I started transitioning over. Okay. I hadn't done a full all at once, all or for nothing. You know, I didn't dive in all the way right away. So I still had apartment rental coming in, and but I had probably sold my most profitable apartment complex. And so I was struggling for a little while there. And I think I was recently married at the time. So yeah, it wasn't ideal, but,
March 2020, man, you don't talk to a lot of people who are like, yeah, I dove into commercial real estate in March of 2020.
Honestly, I wish I had been in a better position to buy more.
Yeah.
In early 2020, it would have been so much fun.
Yeah. But,
and it, you know, hindsight is everything. You know now that, you know, that was the time to buy commercial real estate.
So we know why triple net is nice, right? Triple net assets or net assets. There's a couple different forms. But in a nutshell, why would somebody who's traditionally buying apartments right now, maybe they own a lot and they don't know a lot about commercial real estate, why would they want a triple net asset, or what makes that nice?
Yes. Triple net leases are Awesome. So what a triple net lease is it's called, it's net, net, net. It's three nets. And the nets are common area maintenance expense, taxes, and insurance. And what that does is, so you sign a triple net lease with, let's just say, a hair salon in a retail strip center. That hair salon will pay a flat base rent, let's just say $10 a square foot for their 2,000 square feet. They're going to pay $10 a square foot, but then they pay the triple net expenses are going to be another, let's just say $8. And that covers their proportionate share of the building of property taxes, insurance, and common area maintenance expenses. And those common area maintenance expenses, CAM, you know, are the landscaping, the snow removal, the parking lot cleaning, the cleaning the exterior, you know, could be security cameras, could be electrical for the lighting outside, could be, you know, just a wide range of all that stuff. Could be management.
Yeah. And there's usually not really anything that's not included unless the lease specifies, right? I mean, it's usually everything except your mortgage payment can be
basically
wrapped in maintenance fees.
Basically everything except for your own mortgage payment. You know, sometimes there's some administrative fees that can't be, recovered. But so basically with a triple net lease, you know what your income is going to be, because all those fluctuating costs, those things that can be, you know, hit with inflation, the property taxes, the insurance, the CAM, all those things that fluctuate with, you know, rising costs, they get billed back to the tenant. So as long as you know your base rent amount, you know what kind of rental income you're going to be getting.
And it seems crazy, but like in an apartment building, a lot of the traditional old apartment buildings, heat's included. It's an old boiler heat, right? Your utility company raises heat costs by even a small amount. It affects you. Taxes go up, right? Like very quickly, you find yourself paying attention to the very small, minor details of your expenses. And then you're like, crap, I got to go to my tenants and tell them I got to raise their rent $25. In triple net assets, like you said, you're able to protect your base rent is always going to be your income. Yep. And they're signing leases that say they're willing to pay that, which is crazy. Like, I remember when I first learned about that, I was like, what? How are you going to get a tenant who's going to pay all my bills? Yeah. And if you really dial it back and think about it, whose bills are these? Even with an apartment building.
Right.
Like, I'm not enjoying the heat. Like, that's their home, right?
They're operating their businesses out of these spaces. Yeah. So
Yeah.
So they're the ones using all that stuff.
Yeah.
Not me. I don't operate out of that location.
You don't park in the parking lot all, you know.
Not very often.
Should more.
Yeah, probably. But I'm not, you know, I'm not the one.
You're not the one on your business side.
I'm not reaping the benefits of those expenses.
So it makes sense. Yeah. And it's been around for a long time. And I think it's one of those things that people just sometimes they're like, well, that doesn't make sense. And then there's net ones where it gets even crazier. You can get with national brands that are replacing roofs and doing all sorts of stuff.
There's lots of different versions of a net lease. There could be a double net lease where they only you only recover the property taxes and CAM. There could be, or, you know, property taxes and insurance. There's lots of different commercial lease types. There's gross leases where everything is included. That's kind of like an apartment where everything is included in your $2,000 you pay a month, and that includes everything. So that's not as good for an investor like me, because as those net costs rise and fluctuate, I have to flip, I am.
So I've seen you take over a center, though, where this was a good thing, right? Where you have some leases on gross, some on triple net, and your goal was to move everybody to triple net.
Yeah.
To increase
revenue. So that's one of the value add strategies, is to take a property from a gross leased property to a triple net leased property, because not only does it have a better resale value, but it's also just a more predictable income.
Yep.
They're better leases. Once the tenants understand them, they're probably easier to understand. They appreciate them, and everybody's happy.
Okay, so March 2020, you got your first one. People started wanting to not pay you rent. You got through that phase. Now, at this point, were you more of, this was more you personally, right? This wasn't really raising money yet.
Yeah.
So start talking how you said you read a lot of books, but where did you get the transition from? Was it like, oh my gosh, I love this, I need other people to do this, or... like where did you start transitioning into starting the
good? Yeah, that's a good question.
507 Capital.
507 Capital. So I started 507 Capital in early 2020. My first capital raise wasn't actually until mid or early 2023. But so between 2020 and 2023, I acquired a few more retail strip centers across southern Minnesota.
You personally, right?
Me personally, yep. and then also with one partner that I had already other stuff with anyway. And so then, you know, when I the reason I started 507 Capital is because, well, one, I was like, this is fun. This is making amazing returns. This is, you know, it's almost selfish for me not to share it with other people. And I, you know, I can do more, but my capital can only go so far. Right. So why don't I share with other people, you know, these awesome returns and do more deals in the process? I've built out a good team. You know, I know I have a lot of good contacts. Let's grow this thing.
Yeah.
So that's why I started 507 Capital. And
it's hard when you have the real estate bug, I'll call it, because you're probably like me, you're looking at all these deals and you're finding great ones and you're like, I'm out of money. I can't buy all these. What do I do? And you can't stop looking at them and underwriting deals.
Yeah. It's a big problem.
Yeah.
I got a friend that says it. They've stopped buying, and they say they're on the Alcoholic Anonymous say, like they're
they're on the recovery.
They're on the recovery, like the 3-step plan.
Yeah, they're on the three step plan, and now they're recovering from buying real estate.
They've acknowledged it, and they're
I know my problem is buying too much.
They're in the recovery phase of real estate is addicting.
Yes,
and you know it, once you understand the game too, or you know the game, I like call it. It's almost Monopoly. Monopoly is just like real estate.
Yep.
You know, you buy houses and you buy, you know, more houses and then you buy hotels. That's kind of what I did. I bought apartments and then I bought retail strip centers, you know, AKA hotels.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then you start buying more and more locations and
location, eventually just like Wise Boardwalk Valuable. Oh,
eventually. Yeah. Eventually you own the whole board and mm-hmm. you know, and you win the game, but in this case, we're not really winning a game. But
so you had acquired a couple for yourself. You at the same time you were like newly married, right? Starting to fight. This was all during COVID.
Yep, had my first daughter in the middle of COVID in 2020. So I bought my first strip center in 2020, and then actually spent the rest of that year not focusing on real estate and actually building my own house out in the country. Because everything was shut down. I couldn't really do much anyway. Yeah. And it was just a perfect time to, I was already planning to build my house. So it worked out good, except for the rising costs of, you know, material.
Yeah.
But then in 2020, when I was moved into my house, I hit it again. And I bought three more properties, about $10 million worth of real estate in 2021. Mm-hmm. And then I was out of capital. And so then, and you know, that's why I wanted to continue getting everybody good returns. So then at the end of 2021 and mid 2022, well, the market also, you know,
started changing.
So it was a lot harder to find good deals for people and to do good deals. And so that's why we didn't do our first deal at 507 Capital until mid 2023. Found an awesome deal in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, huge upside. You know, good cash flow from the start. I think, you know, our investors are going to be super happy when we exit that in a couple of years.
So then 2022, you really shifted focus to the private equity firm, yep. right? That's yep. technically what it is. So then you found this deal. Then what's that process like for you, right? So you're like, you found the deal, it costs, what did the deal cost?
This one in
yeah.
Wisconsin?
Yeah.
$3.3 million.
Okay, so then you knew what you had to raise for capital, right? Then what were you doing next? Like, what's the next step?
Good question. So we had to raise money for the down payment, the you know, closing costs, the an operating account, any CapEx that we were going to do. So that's what, you know, let's just say it was a $3.3 million property. We raised about $1 million for it, mm-hmm. and.
So you need $1 million.
We need $1 million. How do we go about doing that?
Yep.
So what we do is we go to friends and family, acquaintances.
So I like that you said that because I don't know exactly the term for it, but there's a term for if you're investing with friends and family.
There's two different types of, there's lots of different types of, it's what, so the technical term for what I'm doing is syndication. Okay. And there's two different, and it's regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission. It's basically like buying a stock. When you buy into a syndication or buy into 507 Capital, you are basically buying a share of an entity, and that entity is going to own the property. But because you're buying shares, it's regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission. So there's two different versions of a syndication. There's a 506B and a 506C. A 506B, you can take money from friends and family up to a certain amount of, they don't have, and non-accredited investors. Right. Basically, the biggest thing is non-accredited investor. And accredited investor is somebody with either $1 million of net worth, not including their own personal residence, yeah, or they make, I think it's over $200,000 every year for the past 2 years with the reasonable expectation to continue making that. As a couple, I think it's maybe double or 350 or something like that.
So you were doing a 501.
So I was doing a 506B.
506B because you knew them.
Friends and family. And you can't, so when you do the friends and family one, you can't advertise.
Right.
You can't advertise. You can't, you know, you can't put it on social media. You can't put it on your website. You
can't push flyers and brochures out.
It has to be people you have pre-existing relationships with. Yep. So anyway, we got, you know, we got $1 million between about 12 investors. You know, average was probably about $50,000 to $100,000 investment. Yep. You know, so these investors, they all actually own a share, they own actual equity in the property. Yep. You know, I think on that one specifically, $100,000 investment got you 7% ownership, 7% equity ownership of the building asset we bought. Yep. You know, so the way I structure it, some people don't structure it where they actually get equity in the deal, but I structure it every time where they can literally go drive to a property and see that property and know that they own a small amount of that
so property. Do they reap any sort of, different than other syndications where you say they don't get equity, now that they have physical equity, is there any sort of like depreciation,
yep,
benefits? Is there things like that are different than other syndications?
Yeah, lots of different income tax.
So that's what might set benefits yours apart from other syndications people might be looking at. You're physically letting them get equity.
They get equity, so then they can get depreciation. They can get losses on their tax return. They can't offset. So the cool thing about depreciation through a syndication is you can get depreciation, so you can actually have a loss on your passive income, and you'll make passive income by investing in these deals, mm-hmm, but you're going to show a loss on your taxable income, but you can't take that passive loss against your W-2 income. So like our ideal investors are, you know, high income earners that just don't have the time to
buy real estate.
Everybody knows that real estate's a great investment, but they don't have the time or the ambition to go out and you know, find these deals, manage these deals, manage the accounts, manage the managers, do all the work. It's not necessarily an easy thing to do. You need to have people in place to do the right things. And maybe if you hire like Realty Growth Management, it would be easier, but it's still, you got to still go find the deal and stuff.
Yep.
So I help those people invest in real estate. They can reap all the benefits of real estate, have equity ownership, have the tax benefits.
So not have to
worry about it.
Yeah. So the goal with that deal is, so they spend $100,000, they get a, like what kind of preferred return are you, what are they getting for return?
There's lots of different ways to structure the deals, but how we structure them is we always do a preferred return, and a preferred return is basically the investors get first money, the first amount of the first cash flow that there is. They, you know, normally it's somewhere between 6 to 8% is a preferred return. And so the first 6% of the cash flow goes to them, whether that's 2 years down the line or, you know, right away. Normally I like to do the deals where they cash flow right away, but if I don't pay the 6% annually for the first year, it just continues to accrue. It doesn't compound on itself, but it accrues to, you know, if I don't pay that 6% on $100,000 for the first 2 years, well, that's $12,000 I owe you know, in year three before I owe the additional six that I owe for year three.
Yep.
If that makes sense. So there's always there that pref is the first money that they get the it's preferred. They get the first cash no matter what.
Yep. And then is your strategy obviously you know you're like you're a real estate guy, so your strategy is probably really dependent on the market, right? But obviously I've seen you, I've done deals with you, you're very picky. So it's already a value add deal, right? Where you're gonna increase revenue is one goal. But then do you have a set like, okay, the goal is to do this and then we're gonna sell and push everybody their money out.
Yeah.
Is that kind of the
Yeah, you keep sending me deals that I keep having to say no to because they're just not good enough. But
there's not enough work to them is what you
There's mean. Just not a so what we go after is strip malls, retail strip centers. We like secondary, tertiary markets. So like we're in southern Minnesota and Rochester right now. I like Rochester, Mankato, Winona. I mostly stay out of the Twin Cities and large markets like that. With that being said, I do have a property. We did do a property in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which is a pretty large market. Yeah. But, you know, the returns were there and the upside was there. So we buy in, you know, markets in the Midwest with value add potential, meaning there needs to be some vacancy in the building that we are pretty sure we can fill. Or there is, you know, maybe gross leases that can be transferred to net leases. Or there is the rent rate is way below market rent, or the property is mismanaged and there's a lot of expenses that we can lower, and there's a lot of different ways to increase the value. But there needs to be I kind of have a formula that there needs to be a way to basically double the investor's money within within like a 3 to 5 year timeline. So if there's not a clear path to doubling everyone's money, it's probably not a deal I'm going to do.
And you said something interesting there that I want to touch on, because this is what I found myself seeing when we were talking about triple net assets before and how the tenants are paying all these expenses. It becomes very easy for your property management company or the owner to maybe not pay attention to these expenses. And one thing I've learned and we've learned with our company is that if you pay attention to those expenses and if you do the right thing to get the CAM down or the triple net fees down, it's much easier for them to pay more in base rent. Like there's multiple, you can't just get them to pay the expenses and hope it'll be fine, right? Like they're probably still looking out at the market and there might be another center they can move their business to that has cheaper CAM. So and you do have to still look at expenses.
You have to pay attention because all these tenants also have the right to audit your CAM expenses. If they see that you're, you know, spending $20,000 on
raking the leaves.
Yeah. They're not going to accept that.
Right.
They don't want to pay an extra dollar a square foot for you to go rake leaves.
But they will say, there'll be a ton of them will say, I'll go out and rake the leaves. I can do it. Then you don't have to charge us for that.
There you go. Yeah. They might do that. Yeah. They care about these buildings too. Yeah. So they want it to be nice.
Yeah. So you do have to pay attention, even though it's paid for by somebody else. You have to pay attention because these people are looking at the market and there's upside to that. You know, if you can lower the CAM, you're lowering their rent, makes the tenant more successful in the space. Maybe they can make more money. Maybe they're willing to pay more. They less likely are going to leave your center.
Yep.
And I think that's the scariest thing for me. I just recently got in triple net and I'm like, scariest thing for me is that. Like somebody leaves your apartment, big deal. You backfill that thing for $900 a month, no problem.
Yeah.
Somebody leaves your three tenant strip center and it's like.
Yeah.
Well, so that's you got to keep them happy.
You hit on a point. That's one of the reasons I only focus on multi-tenant strip centers instead of standalone single-tenant is because, you know, with a multi-tenant, when one tenant leaves, let's say it's a three-tenant center, you still have 66% occupancy. You know, you're down 33%. Sure, that hurts a lot. You're probably not cash flowing anymore, but you're not completely underwater.
Right.
Whereas if you own a single-tenant net lease property, let's just say it's a standalone Starbucks, if and when Starbucks leaves, you have zero cash flow coming in and you are really hurting. And if we're talking about Starbucks was paying an astronomical amount for that space and you're not going to get anything close to that. Yeah. So hopefully Starbucks never leaves, you know, in this scenario.
Everything has trends though, right? Yeah. Like right now that's hot. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know,
coffee's hot.
Yeah. It's interesting to really think about when you say 33%, you can cover it, but there goes your cash flow. A lot of times people immediately their mind goes to, I'm going to buy commercial real estate. I'm going to make a ton of money. I'm going to get rich, right? Like, I'm buying retail strip centers. I'm going to be so rich. And it's like, these deals get very tight. And just like any real estate, it's a long-term play. So 507 Capital, people come in there and they invest. It's a long-term. You want to do deals where these people are continuing to come back, right?
Yep.
What are you doing on, maybe not even just a daily basis, but what are you doing on a weekly basis to either keep the current investors you have excited enough to where maybe they'll come spend it, even though they've only received a couple grand back on their 100 grand, keep them excited or updated to maybe get in the next deal? Or what are you doing to maybe find them the next deal? Or what's the life of Zach in 507?
So it's a lot of,
minus the crying babies in the background.
I think I got 4 hours of sleep last night between my two kids. So I'm sorry if I stumble through this.
This is the most quiet you've gotten in a couple days, I imagine.
This is nice and quiet here.
Can we bring in a crying baby?
No. We don't need that. Home? We don't need that. So what is the day in life?
Yeah.
Well, you asked what it for the investors that are already in our deals, and for potential investors, I like to send out a quarterly newsletter of what 507 Capital is doing. And myself, I am the founder and managing partner, and I run 507 Capital. But at the same time, I have a personal life too.
Yep.
I like to spend a lot of time with my family. I like to watch Netflix just like anybody else. I also like to live the life that I kind of preach. The reason I think real estate is so amazing is the freedom of it creates the freedom of time.
Right.
It's making money in real estate takes a long time, but once you start making money, that money is pretty passive, especially if you invest in deals like this, and pretty hands off. I only like go to the office, which is in my house, 3 days a week, because I wanna live the life that I'm also preaching, the freedom of time. So I spend one day out of the week every week with my 5-month-old son. I watch him instead of him going to daycare. I watch him. Yep. When my daughter was young like that, I did that with her as well. And then on Fridays, I spend with my whole family because my wife is off work and both of my kids are home, and so we spend the time together. So we,
that gives you the energy to be able to do it.
Yeah, and so then I come back to work, start working again Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, rejuvenated, ready to go, and I got to work hard to, I got to. For those, because I finally work 3 days a week, I better work hard those 3 days a week.
Well, and then you got to manage, so now you've this deal in Wisconsin you're talking about. You've made the promises to the investors. Yep. You want them to do more. So now you got to actually follow through, right? You got to get the value up.
So let's just say the scenario, this deal we recently did. We got to fill some vacancies. So we got to communicate with the leasing brokers. We got to, we just had a.
And make that, sure they're working. You know,
make sure they're actually working it, make sure they're working it for sure. And we're pretty close to signing our first lease on one of the vacant spaces, which is phenomenal. I got to stay on top of the property managers who, you and your brother,
you got to manage the people who are managing the property.
One of my jobs is asset management. And so I gotta manage the managers and make sure that they're doing what I expect them to do. Luckily, it's not a hard thing to call you up and yell at you if I have to, you or Nate, and it's normally a pretty easy conversation, and I haven't had to yell at you guys too much yet, but most of the time I am working on trying to find new deals.
Okay.
I am calling brokers, across the Midwest, trying to see what they got. I am underwriting deals constantly. I am just working on deals constantly.
You're underwriting deals to see if they meet your criteria.
They're trying to meet my criteria. We have an investor portal where our investors, they sign up through this portal. They can make commitments through this portal. They can send their money through this portal for the deals that we're doing, and vice versa. I can send returns back through this portal to the investors. And it hits it. It's all electronic.
Yeah, it's really sweet. I mean, it is almost like think of your Chase Bank app or your Northwestern Mutual app. It is.
It hits their bank account. And everyone's happy. And so I got to do that quarterly. And yeah, just stay, you know, if an investor calls me and wants to know the update on a property, I'll gladly talk to them and, yep. and tell them how it's going. The yeah, just a lot of communications, not a lot of networking, trying to try and stay on top of people's mind of, you know, what I do, what I'm looking for, because the biggest hurdle is finding deals.
Yeah.
I guess it's a 50-50, finding deals and then finding capital. So not only am I always trying to find the deals, but I'm also talking to people that might be potential investors and telling them the, you know, the benefits of 507 capital and investing in these kind of deals and why something that 507 capital doing, where, you know, why us when we're retail strip centers versus a syndicator that's doing multifamily.
Well, yeah, when traditionally everyone who's an investor thinks multifamily 90, is the safest asset, right?
90% of syndications and this kind of structure is done is for multifamily.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I got to tell them why. Well, you know, the benefits of the triple net lease, it's such predictable income. It's you know, it's risk adverse. There's
Dave Ramsey and Grant Cardone told me to buy apartments. Why are we buying?
Yeah, well,
or whatever,
let's
right?
Let's not get into that. But yeah, you know, it's retail and, you know, retail strip centers, they're not going anywhere. They have the hair salons, they have the restaurants, they have
they're always going to be there.
The dentists, the chiropractors, they are the service providers of the community. They're not going anywhere.
When's the last time you've seen someone live in an apartment building in a town that had no retail center, no hair salon, no restaurant?
Nobody.
I'm probably not living in that apartment.
They're not having fun in that town if there's right. nothing going on. You know, right. there's no nothing going in.
Yeah, right. It's just, right. And I like where you focus on those markets where you said, because it's, I think it in a lot of senses could be probably sleeper markets for other people who do what you do or are looking for what you're looking for. And if you're able to build relationships with brokers in that market,
yeah.
and they see that you can perform and do things, you're kind of the first call.
Yeah. You know? I mean, there's lots of bigger companies that will never look at the smaller markets. Even Rochester, it's a big market, but they're not going to look at, they're going to look at Rochester because of Mayo. But let's just say a town similar size to Rochester, they're not going to look at it because it's just not a big enough market. Whereas I'm a smaller company, we're more nimble. We can, you know,
yeah, and you're a little more.
We can
boots
make
to the
better
ground.
Connections. I'm more boots to the ground. We can actually work the connections in those markets for better than a big company with 100 employees. They're just not gonna want to do it.
And you maintain those relationships for a long time, you know, right? I've known you for 5 years now, probably, that you've had to maintain that relationship continuously to try and continue to get deals and stay involved in that market. Yep. Now you have to do that across all these other little markets just to stay in the know and be the first to find the deals.
It's fun too. It's fun talking to people in these markets and, you know, making connections everywhere.
And finding deals is tough. Like you said, the triple net assets have traditionally always been low cap rates. And when we say cap rates, that's the return on the money, right? Like they've always been 5 to 6%. What are interest rates right now? 7.5?
Seven and a half.
If you've got a really good banker and you look good, you know, maybe you can get under 7, right?
Yeah, so
you're already going into the deal financed down, right?
Yeah.
So it's like,
so one of the things I tell brokers right now is like, I want to see a spread between the cap rate, which is basically the cap rate is the net operating income, the property, the income that the property makes.
The base rent. So taking the CAM out. Like,
well, it's the net operating income. So it's the income after all expenses.
Yeah.
Divided, the NOI divided by the purchase price. That is what your cap rate is. So what I tell my broker, you know, everybody I talk to is like, I want to see like a 2-point spread between that cap rate and the interest rate. So if the interest rate is at 7%, I want to buy the property at a 9 cap.
Yeah.
It is a hard thing to find. And then not only do I want to buy at a 9 cap, but I want there to be
It to become a 12 cap.
But I want there to be upside. So there's got to be some vacancy as well. So that is finding a needle.
So all the brokers listening, you see what I have to deal with in Rochester if he's trying to buy something here.
It's a needle in a haystack, but you know,
they're out there though.
They're out there. I have one under contract right now. It's actually in Michigan. That's exactly what it is. It's a 9 cap and there's substantial upside, and you know, so it's just, you got to find them
you got one in Michigan under contract right now. At what point do you start? You obviously got to go through and do your due diligence. At what point do you start offering that at what point do you start raising funds for that?
Right now, while I'm talking to you.
Okay.
No.
So that's what people can be. So where can people find information on something
like that? Well, I got
like a deal deck or something? Or
I do have a deck. You can reach out to me. You can find me on LinkedIn. I got a website. It's 507capitalgroup.com. I also have a portal. My website will lead you to the portal, or it also has my phone number. But probably the best way to connect is getting me on LinkedIn.
LinkedIn.
Zach okay. Alms, A-L-M-S is my last name. And just, you know, let me know if you heard me on here, and I can get you an investor, the pitch deck. But basically, I'm not technically raising money on it yet because we are just going to start due diligence later this week. We're going to start diving into the leases. We're going to probably go out there in a week or two to get a physical, you know, look at the physical condition of the property. And then probably about 30 days from now is when we will technically start raising. 30 to 45 days is when we'll technically start raising, and we'll have a pitch deck put together at that point. And this is the end of January. So whenever this comes live, maybe it'll be, you know, maybe I'll be doing an active raise at that point.
Okay.
But,
same scenario. You're going to try, you go out to probably friends and family or people, you know.
Nope. So this one is one we can actually, I can advertise. You know, okay. That's why I can talk to you about it right now and tell you, you know, okay.
So I might've just put you in like an SEC thing.
No, I was already planning at this 506C. I can advertise about it and I will, I'll put it out there. It'll be about a $1.5 million raise.
Okay.
And that, you know, I'm saying that with the expectation that we're going to close on this, but if due diligence comes back that, you know, not good, we're not going to pursue this deal. There's lots of things that could go wrong with this property between now and, you know, our due diligence is up in 60 days. Like, so we,
there's a lot,
there's a good chance we won't pursue this deal. I don't, you know, just because it hits my first couple metrics of what I want the deal to be, doesn't mean I'm going to.
Yeah, you still got to drive out there.
I still got to go out there. I got to see the physical thing. I got to dive into the leases and make sure the leases are what I think they are. I got to, you know, make sure that filling the vacancy is as possible as I think it's going to be. There's so many things we got to look into.
I love the fact that you say going out there, because I think, again, if people are, as the syndication thing becomes bigger and bigger and more people are doing it, the guys who I think are going to be able to do the best for people are the guys who are physically going to go check it out. There's probably tons of people who are raising money and never looking at it, because it's not just the property and what the broker sold you on that looks good. Yeah. It's like, what's the neighborhood around it doing, right? Like, what's the, is there big plans for road changes? Is there going to be a light that comes here and completely screws over my, right? Like, there's a lot of little things that could change.
So much research you got to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done a lot of research already to make sure that it was a good deal. You know, I thought it was a good deal, but yeah, there's so much. Once you have it under contract, that's when the real work starts. Like I said, it was really hard to find a deal. Well, you know, it's also really hard to close.
So now you might have to give up your Friday with your family.
Yeah.
Half day.
Probably. My wife loves when I do that, but you know, she totally understands it, and she gets it.
So. That's awesome. So everyone can connect with you at LinkedIn's the main one. You got
my website, 507capitalgroup.com.
Okay. Do you have any Facebook or anything? Is 507 Capital on there? Or Zach?
No,
there?
I don't have a Facebook,
no Facebook.
Business page.
Instagram,
I do. Anything? I mean, you can connect with me on Facebook, anything. But I don't, that's more of a personal thing. I'm on Instagram.
We'll link his personal phone number, his personal address. And we'll call you guys. We'll put all that in there.
I got it. I can give you my email address.
We'll put some
my
stuff
phone number.
There. So the ideal person, if somebody's watching right now, the ideal person you want to talk to.
So, you know, basically somebody, they got to be an accredited investor, because I'm doing a 506C. I can advertise it, but they have to be an accredited investor. So they, you know, like I said, they have to be probably a high income earner. Yep. We're in Rochester. So a doctor or a nurse or a lawyer or, you know, something like that, that, you know, has a W-2 job, but doesn't and wants to invest in real estate, but doesn't have the time or the knowledge to do so. So they can reach out to me, and we can, you know, I can put their money into a deal and get them, you know, getting a return on their investment, and hopefully, ideally, you know, double their money or something like that in the next 5 years. And then as long as we do that well, do it again, and then, you know, the 5 years after that, and keep growing this thing.
So that's Zach's ideal person, and you'll know how to get a hold of Zach.
I was having a conversation a couple of days ago with a business owner, and I'm from Lake Crystal, Minnesota, way small town compared to Rochester, 2,000 people. But I was talking to a business owner, And I was like talking about real estate, and he wanted to know what I did. And I told him what I did. And he's like, because I was trying to actually sell him a property I owned in that in town there, a small property. And he's like, I don't want to invest in, I don't have the time and stuff like that. And he's a business owner. And I was like, oh, well, that makes sense. And then he asked me what I actually do. And I told him, he's like, oh, well, that's way more up my alley. Like, I want to invest in real estate. Yes, we all know real estate's great, but I don't have the time to do it because I'm running a business, right. You know? So like, he said, give me a call when you do have the next thing, because I want to invest in real estate, but I just don't have the time.
Yeah. So like you said, the business owners who are already investing all their time in their own business, like you are yours, yep, want to invest in real estate on the side, yep, but it's scary because they think they got to manage it and do all that.
Right.
And that's your person that you can provide real value to.
Yeah.
This is your first in-person podcast, you said?
First in-person podcast. I've done some other ones, but I've never done an in-person one where I actually had to look at the person.
You got stuck with me too. Like the worst possible person.
I was hoping for your brother, but
like someone a little better looking at least, right? Like,
well,
well, good.
Take
we'll
what I can get.
So yeah. Now we'll get you back on after you close your next deal.
Sure. Sounds fun.
Thank you for watching and listening to the Real Growth Podcast, and make sure to connect with Zach.
Thanks, everybody.